All right, we're going to call the meeting to order. Supervisor Chris, would you?
Absolutely.
All right, ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Brown.
Heavenly Father, we're grateful to be here today. We thank you for the reports of snow above where we need to be. And Father, we're grateful for those reports. With another storm coming in, we're just going to take all that you give us to help us through this drought time. Father, we know there are issues on the agenda today. We see a lively crowd here. I pray that all the discussion go well. I pray, God, that decisions be made to benefit all of the people of our county. Truly, we appreciate the service of those who are committed in various aspects of the government. We thank you for their service. And God, just bless them and encourage them as they do their work. These things we ask in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Randy.
Oh, roll call, sorry. Let's see. Supervisor Hout?
Here.
Supervisor Cobstaff?
Here.
Supervisor Chris?
Present.
Supervisor Ogren?
Present.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you much. Real quick. The board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District and receives no additional compensation. Thank you, sir.
All right. Going to move on to presentations from the public. This time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion on matters presented at this time. You'll be allowed 3 minutes, and I'd ask that you can take it to 3 minutes. If you want to go beyond that, please give us written comments because we will all read those at the appropriate time. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. Ms. Freeman, you are up first. Former supervisor, I might add. Monty, you just wait for your next turn. I'm just kidding.
Or package two.
Okay. You're going to get 6 minutes then, huh?
Good morning, honorable members of the Board of Supervisors. I am Joan Smith Freeman, former member of the Board of Supervisors a number of years ago, and it is indeed a pleasure to be here today to talk to you. As you are aware, there's a lot going on, and we are here today to introduce ourselves as the joint administrators on the Klamath Mitigation Fund. Some of you may know that, or all of you probably know that, as the LIMF in the past, the Local Impact Mitigation Fund. It is the same fund, and it is currently called the Klamath Mitigation Fund. It's a voluntary, confidential, claims-based compensation and settlement program related to the dam removal project. I have been in your position. I'm fully aware of your responsibility to your constituents, especially having represented the area that Supervisor Chris does that's heavily impacted. I feel very strongly that the people along the lake and along the river should be compensated for impacts to their property. This mitigation fund is only, it's private between the landowner. It's only for the landowners along that area that are directly impacted. There's going to be a letter that's going to be going out shortly to all the property owners in the area, and we will be arranging private one-on-one meetings with all of the property owners. And we wanted to make sure that you were aware of that, and at any time that you wish to talk to us, we are available. As you know, this is not a county program, and since the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, has made the final decision on it, this is going forward at this time, and we wanted you to be aware of it. And I know Supervisor Help, if your area is impacted as well, we would love to meet with you. So,
and for the record, we've got your name. Just me.
Okay, and then I would like to introduce and pass this on. Who needs no introduction, I'm sure, but Monty Mendenhall.
Thank you.
My co-administrator.
Well, I'm back after 3 years of retirement. I just couldn't stand it. I need to come back to work, I guess.
Now, Joan, I know that this is going to be a really a challenging process to get through, but we're looking forward to being able to work with everyone and try to do the best we can and try to accommodate their needs as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing you all again on a more frequent basis than what I have in the past, and we're looking forward to get busy. We're hoping the letters go out later today to those impacted, and we'll be able to do some follow-up with them. So it's good to see all of you again.
Thank you.
So for Monty and Joan, since I'm not a property owner, I'm assuming I'm not getting a letter, but could you leave your contact information with us, please, so we know how to get a hold of you?
I've spoken with Elizabeth, and we're setting up a meeting with you.
Okay. Thank you.
And the board will get a copy of the letter as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, former Supervisor Grace Bennett.
Good morning, Grace Bennett, and I've come to talk to you about a couple of things this morning, good things. The Colliers Interpretive and Information Center have had over 15,000 visitors this last year. We're working on a couple of new projects. Your representative, Supervisor Ogren, and I are working on a river walk with Caltrans, and it'll be a new addition up there. We have our raised relief map that is up and working now, and we're going to add a few new things to that. And I really appreciate your support and work with us on the CTC Center. So I thank you very much. My other thing is something that's on the consent agenda today is the Parks and Recreation grant that was applied for the Friends of Hebrews Field through the Public Works Department, and I want to compliment the Public Works Department for all their help, and especially Kyla Burton. She worked tirelessly on this grant, and it's all completed. It looks wonderful. We put in a new infield, a new irrigation system. There was an old well out there we had to deepen, and we got 200 gallons a minute in water. So our field is going to look really, really wonderful. And lights, well, the new underground irrigation system. The old system was put in by the Deadwood Camp in the 80s. And they put the treatment on the pipes, but they didn't put the glue on the pipes. So we would have explosions of water, geysers of water every so often. And that was one of our biggest expenses, was on water. So, and we put in all new LED lights. So with all of those improvements, and we moved the center field fence back a little bit. So with all of those improvements, our field is going to be wonderful. We have two tournaments so far scheduled. The high school, the varsity has a tournament that they have all kinds of out-of-town kids come. They have a varsity tournament and a JV tournament out there. And they play, I think there's 14 games on their schedule that they'll play there this year. Then we'll have the Little League kids come in, and they're the 12 to 15-year-olds, and they'll play their summer out there. We've had the district tournament and the regional tournament for the Little League kids there, and then American Legion will come in and play after that. I'm also working with the flag football kids, and so that they will have a better place to play in the fall. We've also had, the high school has used it for a concert series, which was really, really fun. They rolled up the screen on the backstop and put their stage out in front, and it was a great thing. They did it all outside, and it was really lots and lots of fun.
Thank you.
So I appreciate all of your help. And good luck today. I know this is going to be a rousing meeting for you.
Well, I hope you stick around. Dan Chase.
I have another meeting at 10, so I have to boogie out, but I'll be here for a little while. Thank you very much.
If I could make a quick announcement, I was told by our office that the Zoom link isn't working. I don't know if that means from the link on the website or what, but it seems we've got people on Zoom, so I think we're working. So, okay. Just need to let everybody know that. Thank you.
I'm Dan Chase. I'm a local rancher in Little Shasta, here to talk about the woods this week. And I just want to basically get the message out there that all of us in the community for the last 2 years out there have just had an incredible disruption to our lifestyle, to our businesses, to our economic picture, to everything. We all are getting just mugged by these animals on a daily basis, some more than others, but it's a tremendous effort just to try to keep these things, you know, somewhat away from us so that we can try to make a living. We've got fencing that's been put up and these things that are done, you know, in good faith to try to have non-lethal methods. The wind blows it down. We have labor invested every single day. We have text chains that are going off at 3 a.m. You know, there's 4 wolves coming your way, and you don't sleep. You don't. It's just not a thing anymore. So, the absolute menace to our entire existence out there is incredible. We can't put animals on places we used to. You know, we can't use the fields and the timing that we need to. We've got to make all these changes. They're tens of thousands of dollars. We run on a bunch of allotments and turnouts on the mountain. I can't send a calf up there anymore. We wean 100% of our animals before we send the cows up there because they've got the best chance of surviving. You know, so we've got 700 or 800 calves in the valley that we're trying to find feed for all summer long. You got to feed those animals. You got to take care of them. It's an incredible burden on all of us that are out there, and it just is amazing that at this point, you know, I don't think there's a bigger problem with wildlife in the state of California. And we get just a little visit here, a little visit there. There's no real action of any sort to actually do anything about this problem. And to date, I've received absolutely no compensation for all of the additional cost, all the non-lethal methods, all the management practices that we've changed to try to avoid conflict. You know, so you'd think that'd be the goal, to keep, you know, have the conflict be avoided. But with all the effort you put out, there's nothing. You know, there's nothing. We just get to pay the bill. We get the disruption all night long, all day long, you know, and it is absolutely maddening. It's the animals are stressed all the time. I run a feedlot operation at home, and that's a major economic stream for us to get through the winter. One little roll through with the wolves, and I've got 4 or 5 pens mixed up, 800, 1,000 head of cattle of different customers and my own, all scattered to hell together. Nothing out there gaining, not a single pound. Probably not for a week, because we got to bring them in, sort them all out, put the crews out, fence the crap out of things again, and then go back to fixing the flattery and all this other crap that's around there to hopefully keep them from coming back in. But they do anyway. These things are not working, and it's about time we get something done that can help us on this problem.
Okay, thank you. I have 2 other comments for in-house, but they're for vacation rentals. If you want to speak now, you can, or you can wait until the item. Just go online, Anna, if there's anyone online that would like to speak without a comment.
Sure, none online. You can wait for the
votes. See, 2 more.
These are for 5A.
All right, so I'm going to move on from public comment. We're going to move on to public request. We have a presentation, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. I believe Mr. Bonham, who is online, is going to give us an update.
Yes, Chair, let me just first make sure you can hear me and see me.
I can see you and I can hear you.
Great. Yes, it's my name is Chuck Bonham, and I'm the director of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. I know that I'm likely to hear a lot of very passionate and important feedback in the next hour or so. I think part of my job as director is to be available for that conversation, be present. I apologize for not being in person. While the prior commenter submits this may be the most challenging wildlife issue in California, I actually think the challenges our department faces across 58 counties and 40-something million people often have us managing very difficult situations. So what I'd like to do is try to walk through kind of a factual update presentation on things the department is doing and have been doing and intends to do, and then basically take questions and remain available to hear all the public comment. I want to acknowledge the opening prayer. I too am very thankful for the hydrology, hopefully being able to claw ourselves out of drought. And I deeply appreciated the opening prayer's comments about trying to acknowledge the challenges of being a public servant. Many people are going to yell at me today. I think it's possible they'll say things about me I wouldn't want my children to hear. My request would be we keep it respectful with each other, but you know, say what needs to be said, because this is part of our job at the department and mine as director. So from there, sure, I'd just say the dynamic around wolves starts probably in 2014 when gray wolves were listed as endangered under the California Endangered Species Act. That is not a decision that our department makes. Whether a species is listed under the State Endangered Species Act is a decision left entirely for a sister agency called the California Fish and Game Commission. Upon any decision by the commission, the department is sent the responsibility to manage the outcome. So since that moment in 2014, have spent a fair amount of time in landscapes across all the northern counties. We've built a program that isn't as fulsome as we would prefer, but nonetheless has given us an ability to try and implement management, and we've had to adapt in the last roughly decade a lot, because as everyone in the room knows, wolves have not been predominantly present in California for quite some time. And coming back to the landscape means we're going to have to adapt as we see the ecosystem response, as well as adapt in our relationships and engagement with landowners as a new predator is in the region. So since that 2014 moment, we've hired staff. I think many in the room know Kent Loudon, who's there in person today, may also know Jeffrey Stoddard. Some have met Tina Bartlett, who's our regional manager. Of course, we have employees who are residents of your county too. We've created a conservation plan for the wolves. We've developed a management plan, and we're almost ready with a final publicized compensation plan, which creates compensation pathways for injury and direct loss, prevention and deterrence grants, and nowhere we can find in the Western United States has anyone tried pay for presence of known wolves in ranching areas, but we're gonna try it here. Simultaneously, we are running a pretty significant outreach and education portal. We are kind of moving information to a long list of subscribers to a specific information service around wolves. We are constantly kind of updating the distribution map with a time lag that's purposeful for security reasons. We've got quarterly reports around the wolf and program activity, so on and so forth. All of this really is coming off of a 2016 wolf conservation plan. It's publicly available. It was created by the department facilitating a process that included farm bureaus, cattlemen's association, wool growers, landowners, federal resource agencies. The county knew, was aware of it, the counties, northern counties, but also environmental conservation organizations. We tried to take that broad range of views, and don't be mistaken, y'all know this, often the views on wolves are in polar opposition to each other. And again, the department is given the job to try to manage this. We didn't make the listing decision. And the core of the conservation plan at the county level is really an emphasis on the department trying to maintain and improve relationships with all of y'all, affected producers, working with agricultural representative associations, USDA Wildlife Services, your counties, seeking to enhance deterrence and prevention activities and tools, compensating producers, capturing, collaring, and monitoring wolves so that we can track their presence and absence more real time. And then most recently, and I will say in Siskiyou County, you are home to ranchers and landowners that are probably creating the examples in the northern state for ways we could develop voluntary local programs and really new permits that kind of balance wolf presence with landowners' liability protection for unintentional take of wolves when the landowner is just implementing typical routine maintenance and livestock management. Again, topics we and you really haven't worked together on for almost 100 years. And of course, there's going to be lessons learned. Of course, there will be mistakes. It's not perfect. And of course, you're entitled to frustration because I can already hear it in the room, even though I'm not there. So then most recently, I think most in the room are probably conversant in, but maybe not some of the core details around the whale backpack, which, I mean, in kind of factual terms, scientific terms on our side, that whale backpack consists of the male wolf identified as OR85 and an unknown origin female. That pack occupies about a 480-square-mile home range in eastern Siskiyou County. So the male, OR85, was collared by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in February of 2020, was likely born in 2029. He dispersed from the Mount Emily pack near La Grande, Oregon, and entered California in November of 2020. So genetic analysis indicates the female is closely related to the southwestern Oregon's rogue pack. In 2021, we think the pair produced 7 pups, and in 2022, we think the pack produced at least 6 more pups. So there have been no new dispersing wolves that we've detected since July 2022, when OR103, which was a lone collared wolf, was detected in Siskiyou, but that animal returned to Oregon in July 2022. So that's the whale backpack. I want to talk quickly about prevention and hazing assistance. Look, I get it. I can imagine a lot of the questions will be about the availability of lethal deterrent tools. Lethal tools are not an option for an animal that's listed under the California Endangered Species Act. That was something the groups talked about in 2014, was well acknowledged in the conservation plan of 2016. We know it's a frustration for many in the community. I may hear that in the public comments. But the use of non-lethal deterrent tools is important. It can be effective. It can prevent and minimize depredation. And am I saying it's fixing all the challenges any owner or operator has? I'm not saying. But I am saying those non-lethal tools can be effective, because we're seeing it right now in your region where some landowners are able, and I understand there's a financial dynamic here, to work with us, USDA and others, and are attempting to use those non-lethal tools, and we can see effectiveness compared to other parts of the region where the barrier to deploying the techniques, the financial cost, or the land property really diminishes the ability to use the tools. There, we're seeing not as effective results in trying to manage this conflict. So since 2017, with a bunch of different livestock owners and operators, we've helped acquire and deploy tools. Y'all are familiar with these types of tools. Fladgery, is it perfect? No, we understand the criticisms about it. Radio-activated guard devices, are those perfect? No, we understand the criticisms about them. Other examples of technology like Fox lights on properties. In the whaleback pack range today, prevention tools like fladgery appear to be effective in pastures. We think we have pretty sufficient data that illustrates their effectiveness in certain land types, range types. But the current area, you know this, you're living it, we already heard a public commenter about it, contains many large pastures that likely can't feasibly be surrounded by that type of deterrent. We understand that. Herd management and husbandry methods may also be effective. Of course, that's a change of operation. It comes with risk and challenges for the operator. We understand that. They could be more consistent tools over time to reduce losses by wolves, but that's going to take time to implement and try to make transition. Frankly, some landowners are already wanting and trying. Others can't or refuse. Like, y'all need the department to listen to your direct feedback. I ask you, extend the courtesy and allow us to also give direct feedback to you. You have a different suite of perspectives across your region. Some want, some can't, but might be willing, some refuse, and that's a reality. We didn't decide listing. We're charged with trying to manage the dynamic that's come from it. So, just so I'm kind of rounding out this part of my presentation, the department, with its own contractors and staff, but also ranchers and ranch employees, may haze animals on foot or by vehicle. Non-lethal hazing, and again, we're pushing boundaries. In some legal contexts, hazing could be viewed as take, which is prohibited under the Endangered Species Act. But as an example of the department trying to navigate a difficult situation with flexibility, we are now allowing hazing. Those tools may include, but aren't limited to, non-contact deterrents, such as cracker shells, screamers, bangers, air horns, strobe lights, sirens. If those methods are not effective and depredation continues, the department may pursue and deploy a next step of more aggressive but still less than lethal contact tools. Here, we've got more work to do with y'all. producers and their agents are likely going to need some ability for the department to approve that next level of action that's more aggressive but still less than lethal. And we're likely going to need to help you work through the federal counterpart approvals with the Fish and Wildlife Service under the federal laws. Wolf Livestock Compensation Pilot Program. I don't meet a lot of producers who have asked, hey, what I really want here is compensation. I understand producers are trying to make a living on the landscape. The reality is we have an animal back that was here historically, but shot off the landscape and is now back 100 years later. We're gonna have to work together to try to get through this. And as a part of trying to work together, the legislature created a compensation program. We know depredation can be concentrated in certain areas. We realize that's likely what's happening right now with the whale back. As a result, you can have an economic impact that's disproportionate on certain landowners or producers compared to the entire range or territory of a PAP. So the compensation program is a logical step. It was actually written into that conservation plan I mentioned in 2016 that had the engagement of the farm bureaus, cattlemen's, wool growers. And then we had a bill, Senate Bill 170, which, you know, Senate and Assembly in California write a bill. It was signed by the governor on September 23rd of 2021. And it directs our department, again, we've been directed to do something in this management space. And I'll just quote from the bill, to develop a grant process to allocate funds to pay for the deterrence of wolf presence near livestock, the impacts of wolf presence on livestock, and for verified loss of livestock for participating ranchers. Funds are available through June 30th of 2026 until the funds are expended, whichever is later. So again, what we've done is we went back to that large group of perspectives from landowners and counties, Farm Bureau, wool growers, through federal and state agencies, all the way over on the other end of the spectrum, environmental conservation organizations. We've tried to propose approaches for the three prongs of the program for compensation in front of everyone and take their feedback. Every time we have a meeting, invariably some part of that dynamic says wants more changes about the program. It's been challenging as another example for the department. So the first two modules of the compensation program, which are direct loss and deterrence, are up and running. Direct loss opened on February 8th of 2022, almost a full year. We've received 11 grant applications. I can't fix any public commenter's problem today who says I haven't gotten compensation. The program has been up and running for direct loss and deterrence for one full year. We're trying to educate the public. I need the Board of Supervisors and county staff though to make sure everyone understands the tool is available. To date, $62,228 has been issued in compensation all the way through the process of the state controller's office cutting the check to the affected party. 11 grant applications received to date. Deterrence grants opened on May 6th of 2022, almost coming up on a year, and has received 13 applications. Module 3, which is pay for presence, is now drafted, and we're about to publicly finalize it. Here's the deal with pay for presence. As best we can tell, no other Western state has ever done it. But we think it's the right thing to do here. So on November 17th of last year, we held an in-person meeting in Reading about this component. And it was open to the public. We invited guests, all the agricultural commissioners, all the livestock producers, the Working Circle, Defenders of Wildlife, the UC Ag Cooperative Extension, Wildlife Services. We thought it was a successful meeting. It allowed us to take the final input on the pay for presence. But again, there's difference of opinion across that spectrum. The department can't wait for that broad group to reach consensus, so we will be publicizing the final rules around pay for presence just in the coming week or so. I know this is a lot of information, but it's an important topic. Let me turn to satellite collaring. There's been strong interest from producers and others for us to collar more wolves. We agree. We agree absolutely. It's hard to collar wolves. The traditional method of trapping them is not always successful. You know what your weather condition is right now. So today, we're publicly going to announce that we're going to maintain and increase our traditional method of land-based capture and collaring, but we're also starting this week collaring capture efforts by helicopter across all of northeastern California. So Lassen, Modoc, Plumas, and Siskiyou County. We've contracted with Leading Edge Aviation, and I'll just be very emotionally direct with y'all. The department took helicopter capacity out of its assets probably 15 years ago because we lost staff in a fatal accident in a collision with an unmarked power line. But we realized that most of the western states, including Oregon, Washington, Wyoming, routinely use helicopters to monitor their wolf populations. So we're going to go up in the air with our environmental scientists and our veterinarian staff, who are going to provide direction and support to on-the-ground capacity. And for the first time, we're going to seek to capture and collar gray wolves using that tool. We're also going to, while we're in the air, capture and collar mule deer and Rocky Mountain elk, because improving our data on their distribution, abundance, and migration patterns, recruitment, survival, is related to all of us trying to manage wolf presence. So this is going to take place on lands managed by the U.S. Forest Service and private property, but only if that property owner is willing, collaboratively, voluntarily wanting to be part of the effort. So we're grateful that to the timberland owners and other private owners and the Forest Service. The purpose of doing this is to get more animals collared. The more animals collared, as y'all know, the more we know on an instantaneous basis about presence and absence. Those collars transmit data to us once a day for up to 2 years. They allow us to track at that scale movement, habitat preference, location. They help us engage with y'all, and I know, taking as an example the first public commenter, you don't like a text at 2 a.m. I don't think we and Kent like sending them at 2 a.m., but Kent is out on your properties with you in those moments when we have this data. It helps us use the tool of the collar as a preventative tool that's not possible with today's more older satellite collar technology. So it's another example of us adapting and trying our best, which I understand you're going to tell me in public comment is likely still not good enough. Two more topics, Chair, and then I'll pause for questions with the board. Okay. Routine and ongoing agriculture and predator control. There are several existing legal pathways for us to work with producers to help manage the risk they think they have on legal liability related to routine and ongoing agricultural activities. So it's been brought to our attention that ranchers and agents like county trappers are concerned about deploying traditional predator control tools, say for coyotes, because they have a fear the deployment of that tool for one species may accidentally affect a wolf. So we understand the need to focus in on dealing with an approval or a permitting or a routine kind of permission platform to manage that concern and risk that exists at the local level. We get that. So right now, and this is going to sound lawyerly, but if you look at the statute for us, the Fish and Game Code, section 2087 creates a legal structure for legal protections for otherwise lawful, routine, and ongoing agricultural activities for predator control. So we're aware of that. We've been thinking about that. We know we need to be engaging at the local level to further develop that aspect. Some of your producers in the region are setting a national example. They have come to us at the department. They've indicated an interest in a voluntary local program as another way for the department to create a structure so that they will not be subject to the risk of prosecution for wolf and predator conflict prevention when they're also engaged in a commitment programmatically on their lands to do less than lethal contact and hazing through best practices at the ranch level. This is breaking precedent. This is setting a national example. My hope is in your own community where you have others that are trying to do these novel things, some that may want to, but don't have the ability or capacity, and others that refuse to for some other purpose, that you don't let your own community silence those that are trying to work with the department. This is hard work. I know it's affecting you at the personal level, the pocketbook level, the up at night level worrying, and I'm sorry for that. Kent is on this topic all day long, every day. Our staff is as well. We know we have more work to do. I appreciate the chance to appear, even if it is virtual. I understand the importance of me hearing public comment. And Chair, back to you. I thank you for the time.
Thank you, Director Bonham. I'm going to bring it back to the board. Supervisor Ogden, I'm going to start with you.
Director, we really appreciate the time that you've spent on this. And the fact that you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You didn't ask for this. And I can appreciate the time that you've spent trying to figure this out. We have constituents that are losing their livelihood because of this situation. And we have to try to figure this out. And I as much as I appreciate all the efforts you're trying to move forward, it's not happening fast enough. And I know that's government at work. I don't know that our ranchers have had the opportunity to take advantage of these grants. I see head shaking no, and I don't know why. I'm not privy to that information, so I'd love to learn that. So we need to figure that part of it out, and hopefully either we can reach out, you can reach out to them and figure out how we can make that happen.
Yes.
And that needs to happen quickly because apparently they don't have they haven't been able to take advantage of that for some reason. And the third option that's coming up shortly needs to happen as quickly as possible. And we need to try to figure out how to keep these people afloat. And the issues with flaggery and the ways that we've been trying so far to manage this situation clearly haven't worked very well for our ranchers. And I know that there's some new things in progress. I love the fact that we're going to be able to use helicopters. More callers are always better. And of course, we all know that the increase in numbers, even though it doesn't seem like there are more pups on the ground, pups make more pups, and it happens very quickly. And if we don't have callers, we don't know where they are and what they're doing. So, and we're always worried about capacity, and, you know, Kent's only one guy, and we all know that he works really hard. I know he works really hard. I've talked to him. And as much as he's passionate about what he's doing, he is only one man. And we need to make sure we have enough people on this project because our ranchers are tired and they need to take care of their cattle and not worry about where those wolves are. So we need your help with this. And if we don't get more people to figure out how to do this, we'll never get in front of it. And we seem to be reacting to a problem that already exists, and that's not your fault, but it is your problem, unfortunately, and we need to figure out how to get in front of it.
Thank you, Supervisor. On the first big point of feedback, I think we should do some form of workshop on grants somehow, and if you were willing to help our staff facilitate just how to plan that and schedule it promptly. I think what we'd ask participants in that kind of workshop to do is don't come in for the policy debate, should wolves be here or not, but rather just like straight up raw information of here's the application process, here's the link, here's the boxes, here's the data, you know, so that we're increasing us informing all of y'all the availability of the funding option. So I think we'd like to do that promptly. Let's not make it weeks. It doesn't have to be, you know, elaborate. It's pretty straightforward, I think, to get together and provide information. Let's try to do that in just coming days. And collaring, yes. I personally think within the department internally, we've had a struggle in the last couple of months debating as scientists what's the most efficacious way, you know, efficient way to collar, and us taking this step for helicopter also involved us, frankly, working through a lot of legacy emotions internally for the reason I described earlier. We need to collar more animals. And then collaring more animals and basically hiring a dozen of Kents or 10 of them is a capacity need. I'm aware of it, and I understand my responsibility to grow our own capacity so that we can help you all better there.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll go right on to Supervisor Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chuck Bonham, thank you for joining us today. I also recognize or remember that that your office did not recommend for the listing of this, of the wolf species back, I believe, in 13 or 14. To us, it's an invasive predator that has come in. I kind of want to look at some examples here. I recognize what we're dealing with the ESA. I understand what we deal with mountain lions and those sorts of things as well. In Los Angeles, Hollywood, Griffith Park, there was a famous P-22 mountain lion. It was well-known, kind of a celebrity down there. had lived in the Los Angeles area for about 10 years. It had killed a chihuahua on a leash, and it killed another chihuahua. And then the State Fish and Wildlife Service took it off the streets and then left it over. It was dying anyways, but they had lethally took care of it. From our perspective up here, for my constituents, I'm not trying to diminish someone's pet, you know, chihuahuas, nothing like that whatsoever. But when an apex predator kills some chihuahuas, you know, we're removing that predator from the streets in an urban area. But when we have a, you know, an apex predator, you know, killing livestock, 4-H steers, 4-H heifers, someone's livelihood in our area, we just feel like we're getting a different treatment. And I recognize the Mountain Lion is a different law than the ESA for the wolf. But in our perspective, you know, we would take you know, someone's pet being killed in Hollywood before we could be able to have lethal means to remove those threats. Other Western states do allow the lethal. And I realize this is under your controls, the ESA. But other Western states do allow the lethal removal of trouble wolves. And I think this is an opportunity for the Fish and Game, or I used Fish and Game law still 10 years ago, 15 years ago in my mind, the State Fish and Wildlife Service, to educate the urban counterparts, the rural counterparts, the Sacramento legislators, our local legislators understand it. But we haven't had this wolf. I would argue it's a different wolf, but that's contrary to arguments at this point. But we have a wolf that's been here, that has been here for 100 years, very gifted. I have a fear of the wolf, but I also have a respect of the wolf in the sense that it's it is an apex predator, very intelligent. There's a reason why the top biologists in the state of California have not been able to capture it. There's a reason why we have to do helicopters. It's a incredibly wily predator. But we ask if Los Angeles is able to remove a predator, apex predator from his presence, that in rural areas we have that tool as well to remove. I'll have some other questions, but I'll stop there, and then I'll let you answer that, and then I'll get on to some of my questions.
Supervisor, I appreciate your input. We've been able to have occasional conversations over the years. I disagree with your analogy. I appreciate you raise the urban Los Angeles context. And as the individual that gave permission to euthanize that animal, we were trapping that animal not because of depredation on a pet. It was end of life. The animal that is probably one of the more studied predators in an urban environment. Whoever posted that, County, I'd like you to pause. Mm-hmm. And set expectations with your public participants.
We need to yes. Caucus, please.
That came up on Chuck's.
Oh, excuse me.
Don't.
Please.
It came up on his
please.
No, it did not.
Hey, we're not going to get into a discussion on this. We want to finish the presentation on wolves.
Right.
Again, I ask for courteousness here.
I'll drop off automatically.
Yeah.
Is that appropriate?
Supervisor, maybe please take a break.
Yeah.
Right now.
Let's take 5 minutes.